Thank you very much. I'm Honourable Global Ms. Kula Barna from the Small Labatse.
Well, Chairperson, it is very heartening to hear what the Reverend is saying. Therefore, I will start today from misbehaving, because there will be no Reverend next to me. But thank you very much for the kind words from Reverend, and I understand that he determined that he's in him. And secondly, thanks for the kind words that he has used towards the committee, because sometimes when you work with this committee, it goes into your veins, and then you understand it most of the time. And when people are talking about it, you always know that they are talking about the committee that worked very hard and so on. But thank you very much for the kind words. Thank you very much.
Skula Bona.
Thank you. Rev, I'm sitting here with my back to you. I do apologize. But you are going to be sorely, sorely missed. I'm hoping you're going to find another member of your party to put against him. But really, I think you've brought a certain calmness to what can often be a volatile portfolio committee. And we're going to miss that terribly. Yours is the oil on the troubled waters on occasion. So thank you for your contribution and for coming on oversight with us over and over and over, like so many others don't. Thank you very much for your huge contribution to the committee. Thank you. We'll be missed.
Thank you, Chairperson. To Honourable Hishwar, yes, indeed, this is a great loss. I was taking him even this morning. The way we miss him, especially with your advices, even spiritual interventions where we go astray, you will definitely be missed. And fortunately, you speak in Parliament. From time to time, we still call you to come and talk to us about certain issues. From the ANC side, you'll be sorely missed. Thank you very much.
Can I also, from the side of the chair and the committee staff and so on, say, add my voice to those of the members to say that we will really miss you. You know, when we did the adjustment appropriation yesterday, I realized, I'm in Parliament now 14 years, and it's the first time in 14 years that we didn't have a division on either IFED or the police. The first time. And hopefully it is because of some of the progress that we've made as well in terms of our oversight around that. And for that contribution, I also want to thank you. I'm going to miss you terribly, because now I've got to depend, you know, there's nobody now that can keep the order between the Honourable Ndlovu and Honourable David George on that time.
So,
not yet. But we will definitely miss you, and also the spirit you bring. It is remarkable for a party leader to be so actively involved in committee meetings. And I think that was the one thing that we always appreciated, especially from the ruling party side, of yourself. The fact that when we were conducting oversight visits, even if you couldn't stay 5 days, you would have been there for the majority of the time, and we really appreciated it. And we wish you well. We're sure you're still going to debate when necessary. You won't leave it as though there is nothing, but we really wish you well. Thank you very much. Members, we're then starting with CEDAW's answers. There's a document that they just hand the documents back to them, they can distribute it to members. If you want us to distribute documents, you give it to us in advance, please. The secretary must take notes. So can somebody come and take this and then explain what it is? Don't worry, she's giving it to the committee assistant. She's giving it to the committee assistant. But really, we can't have things like that. And can somebody just explain what it is that is now distributed to members?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I informed Babalo, we just had a chat outside to say we've got some documents. It's part of the responses. Because it's numbers, I thought it would be difficult to explain the numbers if they don't. the committee members do not have the schedules in front of them.
I really want to appeal to CIRA. We had the same issue during the legislation process. Hand in documents on time so that it does not disrupt the meeting. This is what's happening now, please. Can we continue with the answers?
Honourable Chair, thanks very much. And I want to apologise. It was an oversight. We didn't see that happening, but it's something we would take on corrective action in terms of procedures of the House. So apologies for that. Honourable Chair and members, certainly want to say thank you for the questions posed to us. It's the first round, and I know if Honourable Mlondeke George from his previous life would see round one as a prelude to a knockout. We hope that wouldn't be the case in the attention that we've given to the detail. Chair, with your permission, what we've done was to group the questions and not deal with it in a question-by-question response. Though covering all the questions, we group that in terms of the sections dealing with the council mandate, the capacity and leadership questions, and related matters. And then another group of questions that pulls together questions asked by the honourable members in respect to management issues, performance, and then the financial areas, etc. So it's in those groups, but all the questions are related to that, or related to the specific questions asked by members. If that is in order, then I'd like to respond to the areas dealing with the council, and then also in respect to the question posed as to the leadership and capacity of council, and then also the decision-making process vis-a-vis the salaries, etc. Chair, this is a matter that we need to be very upfront about. The agent's report reflects quite correctly the leadership and capacity problems that the council has. We've indicated that in the overview yesterday, and also these matters are before this very committee in the amendments to the CIRA bill. And so basically we are admitting that the two high-risk areas that we have in the council is the composition of council. We're down to two members of a council, which means as it is, we do not correct. It means also that even as three members, including the chair, that the inherently in the nature of the institutional arrangements where you have a full-time executive chair and part-time council members who otherwise have full-time jobs, that the areas would get blurred, have been blurred, in as far as the responsibilities of the executive chair and the director. And in between that, decision-making processes have been compromised, have been difficult. We do think that in the way the amendments to the bill is being addressed, that solid line of accountability and separation of functions will be addressed. So we don't have an answer to it as to say yes, we acknowledge that. That is the nature of the beast, as it were. So that should be corrected through the governance structures and the proposals that are before the committee in as far as the bill is concerned. That's the one part of it. The second part is that in as far as decision-making as to appointment of members and the oversight of council, given that arrangement, has been problematic. We're hoping that in the foreseeable future, the term of council comes to an end December this year, and that we would be assured that the minister would take into consideration the comments from this House in as far as the composition of council, the qualities of council members, and the competencies of council members in as far as taking CIRA from the transition phase into optimization, because we are still having very big red areas in as far as functionality is concerned and oversight over the entity. Added to that is a comment just that we'd like to make from the council side is that giving direction and guidance and support and oversight over an entity where the executive is new, the strategic direction does require a very concerted input And as it stands, it's something that is suggested. We would seek the guidance of the House in that regard. I'm not saying that as an excuse. I'm saying it upfront that it is a difficulty, it is a challenge, and hopefully in the next phase, with the appointment of the new council, that the handover document, the report to the minister, is something that would be taken into consideration with all those points raised as to where those risks and areas are, challenges are, but also what we need to build on for the next period going forward. I would want to hand over to the director to deal with the management areas, issues raised by the House, and then thereafter deal with the financial issues and the discrepancy, perceived discrepancies that were raised by members of the House. If we, with your permission, go on to dealing with the management issues.
Before you go on with the management issues, you said that you've grouped the questions, and therefore that we're now dealing with the questions around council. One of the questions specifically was, what informed council when you determined the salary of the executive of the authority?
Chair, in stating that is the comment that I made in respect to decision-making processes that have been difficult and maybe to extend in compromise. So council, if you note in the report, for the reporting year, met twice. That
Ms. Holtzman, you're not addressing the question because we can't have... What this is the committee required is, what was the criteria that you used to determine the salaries of the executive? Surely that decision must have been taken somewhere, or are you saying to us you were not part of the decision? That's what we're trying to establish. What criteria were used? Members, can you switch off phones, please? What criteria were used? Because clearly it's not in line with the Entities Act and the salaries for entities in this category. So we need to understand as a committee what was the motivation for this discrepancy.
Chair, the simple answer to that is, maybe not so simple, but what we try to indicate is that the council met twice. The relationship between the day-to-day executive decisions of the council or the oversight decisions and that of the management has been blurred because of the inherent nature of the institutional arrangement. So therefore, implied in that is that council hasn't been functioning optimally in as far as it was able to provide oversight in respect to all those areas and decision making vis-a-vis executive decisions and criteria. What we do have in front of us is a process that was undertaken before our term, where PricewaterhouseCoopers apparently did a study on salary scales, etc. But the finalization of it or what informed the decision, we can't say with that confidence because of the decision-making process that has been underway. That is far as, in all directness and honesty, I could say, Chair, that the simple answer to that is that it has been one of the difficulties that I'm raising.
I'm still not getting it. I'm sorry. The Act is clear. The Act clearly says the Council appoints. The Act clearly says it, that the Council appoints. This committee is not getting the answer. Honourable Ndlovu, Honourable Mulaleki George.
Chairperson, may I pray for indulgence here? Can we pass this question? We will come back to it later. I know how, because I understand what she is saying, but maybe it will be embarrassing in the way how we are going to deal with it at the end of the day. Because I know where we are coming from, and I know why we are saying what we are saying. But I understand where she is coming from with an answer. Can we just keep
over? Honourable Ndlovu, you've got to motivate to me why we need to suspend this answer, because we need to get this answer. It needs to form part of our report.
And
what is in half an hour or an hour difference going to make in terms of the answer?
I agree with you, Chairperson. I was saying that we can deal with it as a committee, knowing very well of what she has already said. Understand what she has already said, and then we'll take it from can say it openly and clearly.
Honourable Global, must I remind members that we can summon people to this house to get answers. This is an annual report hearing. Members come to this committee to do oversight on entities that is reporting to this committee. This committee has a responsibility to look at how entities or departments have spent their money, which is not their money, which is Parliament, which is the taxpayers' money. Even in the case of the authority, it's not the authority's money. Levies, fees are determined by government, therefore it makes it a type of tax. We need to understand what the decision was. What are we going to put in our report? How did they respond to this? They responded to this by giving us an answer that the Honourable Global will understand. I surely don't understand the answer. I'll come back to you, Honourable Global. Honourable George?
Probably the answer to what she said, that's why I wanted clarity when I raised my hand. She said the role of the chairperson and the director sometimes become bland. And I thought in terms of the law, which we passed, the role of the chairperson is very clear, and the role of the director is very clear. That's why I wanted to know from here, where did this thing start now there seems to be no clarity between the role of the director and the role of the chair? Because probably that's where the problem is. That's why I just wanted to add that, because she has said it herself. Probably when she answers your question, she can probably tell us why this role conflict.
Maybe that can assist to the answer, but the fact of the matter is the director didn't appoint himself. Council appointed the director. He didn't appoint himself. The deputy directors were not appointed out of thin air. There was a process. Council, as part of its oversight, should be able to give us the answer on what were the criteria to determine the salaries, how did you get to it. It's a simple. If the fact of the matter is that the two councillors who are present were not part of that process, then tell us that. Then we know what the answer is. But we can't have political answers in what is a reporting responsibility. Try and clarify for us the issue.
Thanks, Chair. I would be able to answer the first part of the question. In as far as the appointment of the director, council, as a council, was part of the process in as far as the appointment. However, I should say, in terms of the salary scales, which is the second part of the question, that we cannot answer with full confidence, because there's been a process that preceded the council but wasn't concluded at that stage. So what informed that, we cannot deal with at the minute. But yes, council was a part of, and just if I just go through the exact period, the current director was appointed in August of 2010. And that was after the posts of the executives were evaluated. There was, in fact, the post was vacant for that matter, and the council members were part of the appointment process. I could say in the affirmative.
So in clarity, you were part of the appointment process. What you're telling us, you were not part of the package process.
Yes, because there was a process underway that provided the basis on which salary packages were decided upon. That was a separate process.
By PricewaterhouseCoopers, not by Public Service and Administration, not by Treasury, not by ministers responsible for entities. That I don't understand. Honourable George.
The deputy chairperson We're not fighting you. We love you very much. But can you please, you see now, you're talking, you say things which might make us mockers. You say the council was partly. Who else? Because if the council was partly involved, it means there was another party which was involved. Tell us, who is that party?
Chairperson.
Honourable George, I'm chairing the committee. There is another question from Honourable Ndlovu. I will take the question from Honourable Ndlovu and then I will give Sira an opportunity to respond.
Chairperson, I understand what the Deputy Chairperson is saying, but my problem is for her to come clear and say that they were not part and parcel of deciding the salary scale. That's all she has to say, nothing else. And she mustn't go any further than that because of what I told you before. Because I understood her from the beginning, the way she put it. But I didn't want to put a word in her mouth to say exactly what I'm saying. Because at the end, she came and said that they were part and parcel of the first phase, but not of the second phase. That is where my problem lies. That is why I was saying I have a problem. Now I'm asking her now, because she has already taken the first step, to say whatever she wants to say, but underline those words in a very senseless manner so that we all understand it.
I find this extremely interesting that members want to tell people before us how they must answer questions. You know, this is supposed to be one of the most robust committees in Parliament, and suddenly we want to tell the entity that is before us how sensitive they must be in answering the question. Can we just get the answer? Simple as that. Makes it easier. Just give us the answers, please.
Well, Chair, the position and interpretation is correct. It was a two-part process. Council has been part of the first part, which is the appointment process, interviewing, the selection interviewing, and appointment of the director. The second part was a separate process. But it wasn't formalised in council.
Say again?
It wasn't formalised in council because the way we understood that was that there was a process on what the salary scale would be for different levels in the public entity, etc. But that hasn't been formalised in council. So the position, as interpreted by the Honourable Member Global, is correct.
But Honourable Global, it doesn't help you say it. We need them to say it. Can we get a second part of this question is, what in terms of the deputy directors happened? Council is responsible for appointment. We just want to get clarity on what happened there. Is it the same thing?
Honourable Chair, it's the same thing with the variant in that separation was made. All the deputy directors were not appointed at the same time. So for some of the deputy directors, one or more of the council members were involved. And for another position, other council members were involved. So to be clear, for example, at some point we were five members, which included one member who subsequently is on another assignment and had to resign, and another member who resigned at a very early stage. At the point when one of the deputy directors was appointed, we were, I think it was four, we were all together, four, one, and then we curated, and then on another occasion, there was a quorum, but not all the same members were involved. So, for example, I would have been involved in one interview with one director, but not in the interview of another, and then General Dummett in the other interview, so because of the capacity and the timing of it. And the same process also was followed in as far as appointments are concerned, so council would have been involved in that. irrespective of the composition, would have been a quorum, but not involved in the salary determination. That was a separate process. So the answer to that is the same with the variance in as far as composition is concerned.
Sir, what is difficult in...
Well, George, I haven't acknowledged you yet. Mr. George.
Madam Chair, what is difficult, Commissioner Holzman, on just saying so and so determine the salaries? You have told us the first part, but that the council, which is supposed to determine salaries, did not determine salaries. And you have said in a very nice way that it was not determined by salaries, but is it difficult for you to tell us who determined these salaries?
Honourable Member, it is difficult because if you're not there, you can't speculate. You can't say this unless the documentation is this is how it was. So I can only present what we know as council and what council decisions were and what we signed off on. So I don't want to, and I don't think it would be proper for me to comment on how a process happened if you're not part of it. I think that's a simple evidential response to it. So yes, council was part of it in as far as the posts were vacant, it was advertised, we interviewed, and that's what we've done. So I can't say, and I don't think it would be correct to say that so-and-so did it, how it was done, because we don't have the information to support it. So unfortunately, I can't follow through on the answer to that question.
Ms. Molobatsi.
Chairperson, I don't know what is so difficult in saying so-and-so determined the salary. If it's not the council, who determined it? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Jules, I'm coming to you. I also find it worrisome. You know, it's as you are the oversight body, council is the oversight body. With the challenges that we all are aware of. But again, even your answer in terms of the first part of the question, where you said we're now addressing the challenges through the principal act that we are looking at, etc., that didn't come from neither the council nor the authority. Those suggestions came from this committee. It's not the council nor the authority that are bringing it under the attention of the committee that there's a problem. It's this committee that picks it up. Now, what is happening here, and that is what concerns me, is as good as we're having SAPS in front of us, and we're saying to SAPS, why is SAPS 13 stalls in Northwest in a mess? And SAPS management say to us, but we're not part of the SAPS 13 stall in Northwest. We sit in Pretoria in a building. You are the council. Surely you must have questioned these issues, even if you only met two times. And if you didn't question them, then surely this is an oversight from council side as well. I'm just concerned about the fact that whether we like it or whether it's functional or dysfunctional, and we now have the council acknowledging that it's dysfunctional. So that can form part of our report. But surely, what corrective measures did you as members of the council make around this? What interventions did you make? George?
Just last question I'm giving up. Madam, assuming that some people did the determination of salaries, I would still have expected those people to come back to the council. Because that's the body that determined. Come back to the council and say, this is how we have determined salaries, and then the council say, okay, fine, go ahead. Now, if the council says, we don't know, we were not part. I'm just asking you, is that how this thing happened? Because if these people, whoever they are, determine this salary and report it to you, surely it means you are involved. But if they determine this salary and carry on with the work and you pick up from what I hear from the minute, then it is a something wrong.
Ms. Kulabon.
I think we should perhaps ask for some input from General Drummond, who has been on that entity for a long time, I think.
They're on the same period.
Same period of time. I mean, it seems obvious to me that somehow people are setting salaries that are outrageous, and we need as an oversight body to have them all reviewed. I don't think it's acceptable that what's gone on has gone on. All of us raised the issues about salaries. We need to, if necessary, call in a forensic audit and have everything reviewed, because it's unacceptable. We know that.
I think we have to do that, because as I read to me this yesterday morning, the minister's answer to Honourable Stewart is that the minister has already asked the accountant general to investigate the whole issue of the salaries within Serum. But it is a concern. I mean, members, CIRA and the council, you just had to watch last night's news, this morning's newspapers, to see what happened in front of SCOPA yesterday with the SABC board and with the council. What we are asking you here are ordinary questions that one would ask to a council and to an authority. What we're asking here is nothing more, nothing less than we would ask from SAPS, that we would ask from IPED, that we would ask from the Secretariat. In fact, SAPS, one year we even asked him, who are these Section 35 that you've given to? We want to know each and every one of them and what were the reasons. And I remember this was a late meeting, it was about 7 o'clock at night when they had to answer that. Maybe I'm going to try and take this process forward in the following way. We're giving you until Friday to, in writing, spell out the process for us that was involved, the councillors that were involved in the interviews of the director and the three deputy directors, the council dates on which those decisions were taken, the minutes of those council meetings. Shouldn't be difficult, since there were only two in the past, and the previous year there were four. And then also the whole issue around the salaries. Because PricewaterhouseCoopers can't determine salaries on behalf of government. They might make an input. They might be the people that can investigate, etc., and say, this is what we think. But it's ultimately the Public Service Commission, together with the Entities Act and Treasury, that determines these things. So can we get a full report by Friday? And I'm sorry that I'm pressing you for Friday, but we need to finalise our report as well by Friday on this issue. Then we can move off this issue and carry on with the rest of the questions, unless there's something that you still want to add.
I'm not sure now that the instruction is noted.
Can we then continue? You said the next section would be the finance or management. Yeah. Continue with that, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to members, honourable members of the committee. Honourable Nawati asked the question, how many calls did we receive from the hotline in under that financial year? I do not have the total number of calls that we received. However, we received 26 reports from KPMG. We will, however, request the report in terms of the total number of calls that were received. Just to also put in perspective that the line was dedicated for...
Mr. Choke, repeat what you just said. You don't have the total number of calls. I didn't say that there is a provision for you to come back with a report on it. You had since yesterday 1 o'clock up to this morning to get the total number. Why don't you have the information available? We didn't break yesterday so that members of the authority can go and sightsee in Cape Town. Why don't you have the total numbers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the total number of cases that were reported to us. It's 26 cases under that financial year.
You say you don't have?
Normally, how the hotline numbers work is that people will call in, there will be drop calls that go through the numbers. Those are the numbers that I do not have, because the question was specific to the number of calls. So I'm saying to the Honourable Committee that I have the number of reports that were sent to us by KPMG, which is 26 in that financial year. And I was saying that I still have to get the number of the actual calls in terms of their hotline report. Madam Chair.
Before you continue, what was the cost for KPMG for that year?
Madam Chair, it would have been 47,880.
It's the 26 most expensive calls in the country's history. 26 most expensive calls in the country's history. 47,000 rand. 26 calls. Almost 2,000 rand a call. Value for money? They say they got 26 complaints following the calls. The cost for KPMG for that year was 47,000 rand. So it must be the most expensive calls in the country's history. You must respond to this, Mr. Chokri. You can't just continue. You can respond to this.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. As I've said, the number of calls is not 26 calls.
You said the others are drop calls. We carefully listen.
Madam Chair, I've said I was explaining the process of how call centers work. And I've said to the Honourable Committee that the number of reports we received from KPMG under the financial year were 26. And therefore the calls are different from the number of reports that we received. I do not want to deceive or misrepresent the numbers that I do not have with me to this point.
Then we're back to the question, why don't you have the numbers? You had until from yesterday 10 to 1, exact time, until 9:30 this morning. Do you take this committee serious, Mr. Chokri?
Very much, Madam Chair. Very, very seriously.
Had those numbers. One call to KPMG. Are you not keeping record of this? Have you not followed in that year to see how many calls that they actually received? Did we get value for money?
We do, Madam Chair. As I said, the information we have at this stage is the number of hotline calls that we have. If I may also proceed in terms of the other part of the question.
Sorry, I think you must first explain to us, what does these reports contain, these 26 reports?
The 26th report, Madam Chair, could consist of the reports that are made by members of the industry, as well as security officers, as well as members of the public, in relation to any other complaint against the service provider, as well as which may also include members, employees of CIRA. That would be the typical reports that would come through.
26 report refers to how many incidents?
The 26th report is referred to the incidents, 26 incidents as it's reported.
So I'm back to the point of 47,000 rand paid for 26 calls. That's what it boils down to, Mr. Chokri. You can color it in as much as you want to. That's what it boils down to. The 26 calls reports refer to 26 calls.
Madam Chair, you're correct.
Why did you try and mislead the House before then?
As I said, I do not have any intention to mislead the House, Madam Chair. I fully respect this House. I was just trying to answer the question to the best of my ability.
Mr. George? Mr. George, use your microphone, please.
What is difficult in getting these numbers? You know, in Parliament, the President was asked how many in the in the hot hotline. She gave, he gave an answer as to how many. And you were told yesterday, you said yourself, this question was asked yesterday, what is difficulty in getting these numbers? Is it complicated? They are not there. You're going to manufacture them, or what is the problem? Why can't you phone your office and then get the numbers?
George, we've passed that point. The 26 reports that he refers to is 26 calls. We've passed that point. He's now acknowledged it. Because I asked the report, how many incidents does it refer to? And it says one incident. So it's 26 calls. The rest is now again the story of drop calls and whatever else. Per year. Yeah. And I think we also need an explanation. Why did you need KPMG to be doing this, or whoever is doing it for you? Why did you need them to do it? Why wasn't it possible for the council themselves to handle 26 calls?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the time, we required an independent body to be administering that solely for the purpose of ensuring that if there are people who would then feel intimidated in terms of reporting allegations of corruption as well as allegations of misconduct against the industry, would feel free to do so anonymously.
My understanding of the legislation is that CIRA is the regulating authority. So you are the independent body that people with problems call to. So now you have seconded your main responsibility to a private company for 47,000 rand. And 26 calls. How can you have another independent body on what is supposed to be the independent body? Must we now establish an independent body to report issues to, because for the IPEC, for the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, we have a separate independent body that they can call to lay charges. It doesn't make sense. Do you think it was a cost-effective decision to take?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps let me start by clarifying the hotline and the use of it. The hotline was not established to move away the responsibility of CIRA to take complaints from members of the public. As reported yesterday, we have a complaints line which is managed by the Law Enforcement Division, and it is also, I think the numbers were also reported in terms of how many complaints were handled, which later became part of the investigations by law enforcement. The line, as I said, was dedicated specifically for members to report corruption, as well as corruption against members of CIRA, corruption against service providers, and therefore to ensure that people are able to report those unanimously.
Mr. Tsuyuki, you're not answering my question. Do you think it was a cost-effective decision to take?
Given the numbers of the calls we received in that year, Madam Chair, I am in agreement with the with the committee that it was not cost-effective. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm really trying to stay calm around this issue. Because there is no motivation for you to have this hotline. People should be able to lay complaints with CIRA anonymously as well. They shouldn't be. Government can't outsource its responsibility. And whether you recognize it, realize it, like it or not, you are part of government. That's why the TFMA is applicable to CIRA. Members, we will park this issue as one of those that we will definitely have to report on. Yeah, I don't know. Can I ask the council members here, were you aware of this decision? Or is this wasn't in their report at any time.
Chair, just conferring with the fellow council members, not in our recollection.
Continue, Mr. Chonke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The second part of the question was what were the companies that were competing with KPMG, and what were the prices that they were putting forward. We have KPMG which put forward 47,880 to manage the line for the whole year. We had Deloitte and Touche Touche trading as tip-off anonymous, which were quoting 469,800. And we had also Ernst & Young that was invited, which eventually did not quote. Thank you, Madam Chair. The other question that was asked was whether in program one was the process of identifying topics the only process in that year. The answer to that, to put it in context, Madam Chair, is that the process of identifying topics that needs to be researched is quite a complex process, which then requires that there needs to be discussions around areas of the mandate of the authority, as well as developing concept on what priorities should be set. And what also follows is the recruitment process that should have taken place that year. And as we said, that the recruitment process took longer than we anticipated. Therefore, we didn't get to the problem as it was not achieved.
Follow-up questions on that to answer, members. What is so complex about determining the topics, and how do you plan to have four reports, research, or two, I can't remember the exact number, ready, but you don't have people in the job? And, I mean, really, if our researchers in this committee it has to take a year to identify topics for research, they will get fired so quickly it won't even be funny. What is so difficult about identifying topics? You were busy with the legislation. Was that not a logical topic to do?
Madam Chair, as I said, that we, at the time, we did not have in place the unit as such.
So how do you plan to have the research reports if you don't have a unit?
The entire process of recruiting the head of the unit, as well as the people that would be responsible for the research, is part of what that process that we undertook in that year, Madam Chair.
Explain what is so complex about determining topics for research.
Madam Chair, what I have said is that the process of determining topics for research would entail us having to look at the mandate of the authority, as well as the areas which we need to prioritize and develop concepts around it, so that we are able to know what are the outcomes that we are targeting in terms of the research. And as we have said, that we've had challenges in our HR in terms of capacity. Therefore, that was also part of the reason for non-compliance in that respect.
I don't know whether this answer satisfies members, but I think we're not going to get a better answer, so let's move on. Mr. Chowke, your answer is completely unsatisfactory. Carry on, please.
The next question by the Honourable George Mdileki was, how do we do the planning? Madam Chair, I need to explain to the committee that when we do the planning, we go into a strategic planning session. In that session, we then take stock of the situation that we are in, guided, of course, by the mandate of the authority. We then set on to set the priorities and the objectives that we are undergoing that year. Given that, we would then develop the annual performance plan. After developing the annual performance plan, then we go into the costing of the plan. And that is how the planning is done, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Follow up, Mr. George.
One, listening to all your report, all your plans could not, and your targets could not be met because of financial constraints. That is why I asked, how do you plan? Do you plan and then later go and look for money? Or you plan, you see, most of the departments, they plan after the budget is, so that they plan on the basis of for the money they have. Now I'm asking you, which one comes first? Do you plan and then once after finishing planning and then say, where are you going to get the money? Then that's where you can't do anything because of budget constraints.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Choke, I also want to add to Mr. George. You see, it comes back to this issue of we plan to have research reports, but we don't have a research unit. And it's very, very difficult to determine research subjects. Surely, when you establish we need a research unit, you've done so because you've already established there's a need for specific research. So this, do you understand why we say even this one? And Mr. George is quite correct. There is nothing talking to the other. There's no, the plan does not talk to your financial situation. The financial situation does not talk to the plan. The point, this one that you give yourself in terms of achieving this objective on the research, as an example, because I'm done with the research issue. It's ridiculous. You did not achieve the objective. Simple. And I don't know what this 1, 2, 3 in any case is. In PFMA, you either say we've achieved or we didn't achieve. Please answer the Honourable George's question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable George, let me put also in context how the revenue of the authority is derived. As I've said, following from the question of the planning and the costing, we need also to take into context that the authority is dependent on the fees that are contributed by the industry. So what would then happen is we would then project on the number of security companies that we have, the number of employees that we have, how much revenue will be coming through that year. And that, as we bill, then the money will then come. So the manner in which sometimes we revise the priorities is when there is we project that there might not be enough money for us to be able to achieve a certain priorities. So just to come to clearly the context of the budget versus the plan versus the money, is that the money will then be coming from those levies or those annual fees that we project that year according to the numbers that we have. I'm not sure if that clarifies the question.
That's the last question, because are you saying you can plan to buy 7 cars, 7 vehicles? At that time when you are planning, you don't have a site. Is that how you plan? So, well, we hope that we will collect so much. What type of planning is that? say, we're going to buy 10 pigs, hoping that God with us, the industry will be able to pay. Is that the best way of doing your work? Is it not better that you, on the amount you have collected, you plan on the basis of the money you have? Isn't that better that way? Because you're going to have this situation which is not also not good for you, where you say, not achieved. Is it not better for you to plan on the money you have? You say, this is the amount we've collected, and when we're going to this planning, and this is what we're going to base our plan on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My Deputy Director of Finance would like to put context to the answer so that she clarifies it better.
Mr. Rebellion.
Thank you, Honourable Judge. I think the Director was explaining precisely the challenge of our environment, because we are a trading entity. Therefore, we generate income, and we are supposed to use that income in expenditure of the programs that are there. Coming to the issue of why don't you use the money that you already have, there is, at the end of the financial year, actually PFMA requires you to surrender any surpluses that you will have to Treasury in the event that you have. So there is no way you can begin a year with money sitting in the bank, because you would have to. It's required by Treasury that you must motivate, and normally when you motivate, you are motivating not for operations, but you'll be motivating for things like if you have a going concern problem in terms of expenditure. So we are different from an entity like or a department where towards November they know that they are going to get, for instance, 100 million, and then they plan around that 100 million. In our case, we use historical data to project how much we'll make and project how much we may not be able to recover based on history and also the number of companies. Now, in the particular year we are referring to, the challenge was on the fact that the delay on the promulgation of the annual fees, because the budget and the strategic plan was based on the fact that we would have increased the fees. That process was delayed, coupled with also the unplanned relocation of the authority from a lease, from an owned building where we didn't pay rent, to a building that where we had to pay rent. So less revenue coming in, as well as more expenditure by, not by choice, exacerbated the decision to defer some of the programs as indicated in the presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Ndlovu.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I listen to what the CFO is saying, is that financial dumping? Are you talking about financial dumping towards the end of financial year? Are you saying that?
Honorable Ndlovu, no. I was referring to the fact that we would not be in a position where we have cash that is just available, because there is a requirement in Treasury that a trading entity, if it has got surpluses at the end of the year, must surrender those surpluses to the revenue fund. Thank you.
Speaking to this, and speaking as an entity that always cries poverty, you haven't got enough money, I mean, endlessly, you can't do this, you haven't got the funds, you can't do that, you haven't got the funds, you can't do the next. Are you telling us now, I mean, what sort of surplus are we talking about? Was there money lying unspent by an entity that always cries poverty? I fail to understand.
Before I answer what my colleague is answering, the question was, how do you plan? Now, the CFO is saying, you can't surrender the surplus. Now, I'm asking the question, is that a financial dumping or what? In answer to what Mr. George was asking, because I'm trying to link what the CFO is saying to what Mr. George was asking. Ms. Kola Barnard's question will come from the other side. But if you link that and what the CFO is saying, is that financial dumping? To me, unless you give me exactly the answer what Mr. George is asking. Because I don't understand. It doesn't link up correctly unless you say what I'm thinking to say.
You know. Thanks. Maybe just to a second part of the answer, the second part will be followed up with by the CFO. This is a problem that we have identified, and we don't have the answer to it at the moment. What we've done in the meanwhile is that General Drummond and I went to have a discussion with Treasury to look at the possibility of a facilitated discussion with other entities who are in a similar situation to look at what financial models they're using. Because the issue that we raised was that if we are in a financial unstable situation where there's dependencies, what is the best planning process we should undertake to ensure that that the strategic objectives and the budgeting process is linked so that we don't have this dependency, that we don't have money, that it's unplanned for, etc. Because the fact of the matter is we collect fees. So that is our financial base. How do we achieve the objective in the instability created by the dependency on fees? So for example, what system does ICASA use? They also generate that, or their revenue is also generated in a similar way, or other entities. So we're not sure, I mean, quite frankly, I would say from a council point of view, we're not sure what the best possible model is. And it is unsustainable to be dependent on the system we use in an unstable environment. So I can't answer the question directly, maybe that's what the CFO could answer, but in the general sense going forward, we know that that is a problem area and we need to find a process to get through that, maybe benchmarking against other entities, public entities who operate on a similar basis, and that is what we are in discussion with Treasury around, to sort of match that with the competencies in those areas. But the specifics of that honourable global is can be probably directed or answered by the CFO. Thank you.
Lova, come back to you after CFO has responded.
You see, Jefferson, I understand.
Well, no, Lova, can I get the CFO to respond first and then I'll come back to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I was responding to the question on why don't you use the money that you have at the end of the year before you begin the financial year. And my point of clarity was that we generate income, unlike a department where at the end of let's say in November, they already know how much they are likely to get, and they plan around that budget. With us, we have to make assumptions based on history and how we'll raise revenue, or how we'll do pricing on fees and disbursement fees and so forth, which gives us a forecast of how much the budget, how much revenue will generate. That on its own, then it's the potential income that we'll get. We cannot say, due to uncertainty, uncertainties that can arise, or the risk that can arise, that what we've said will bill, will be able to collect, because the immediately after the budget and the strategy plan was approved, there was a legal case by the CEO which then led to reduced collections. But on the second part, with respect to the surrendering of surpluses, I was indicating that even if we had surpluses at the end of the year, let's say we collected double the money and we are sitting with 100 million, PFMA requires an entity to surrender surpluses to Treasury. So you surrender, you pay over the surplus to Treasury. So you cannot even keep those surpluses in your books. So I was not referring to fiscal dumping.
What you're not saying, CFO, is the fact that Treasury and PFMA also makes provision. If you've paid over, that you can again apply for that money. That's what you're not saying. So it's not true that you have no idea of what you're getting. You know exactly how many legal entities you have on your books. You know, this whole thing about the fees that went up, the levies that went up, and then there was a court case. It wasn't approved. That's the point. It was not approved. You went against Treasury's advice. Now, don't look like you're surprised by that. In your own presentation, it was said 5%, Treasury said 9%, 9.1, thanks, Ms. Malabatsi. But you decided to have this huge increase. And then you were surprised that somebody took you to court. And on the issue of the building, yes, you had no choice to move. But you had a choice to take a cheaper building. You had a choice to take a cheaper building. You had a choice to take your old furniture and not spend 4. Whatever million rand on more furniture and moving. You had choices. Like you had a choice to pay 47,000 rand for 26 cores. And it's those choices that you must be held responsible for before this committee. Please answer the second part of the member's question.
No, that's the only question I was asked to answer. We were clarifying on the budgeting.
Are there any outstanding questions that you had in that round?
Madam Chair, on my side, I just want to give the CFO some small lessons about business. What you are saying is not new. Anglo-American oil company, I was there for 14 years, that's exactly what we're doing. We were budgeting on the basis of what we perceive would be our income based on our premium. If we sold so much, then we budget on the basis that that's what we're going to get. And like you are saying, any business depends on all sorts of things. Could be a slump in terms of construction in the country that affects your business, a slump. So it's all the same thing. But you can't say, I can't plan, I can't budget, I can't miss a target. But you can't also say all of them are going to fail. When you plan, you take into consideration that there might be other forces outside my control that influence what I'm doing. So you have not told us anything new. We know what you are saying. But it does not answer the question is, why can't you meet all your targets which you have yourself set for yourself?
Honorable Kulabana, these are outstanding questions. Yep. I also have outstanding questions. I don't understand how they missed them.
Okay. I I think we've dealt with the uncollected debt and the use of the consultants. I don't think
Mr. Choki.
I don't think we're going to get anything further, so maybe I should just leave that one. But I did ask who took the decision to appoint the chairperson full time. And at a much higher salary than prescribed by Treasury for equivalent entities. Was the decision taken by the three-person board on which he sits? I don't know. So I'd like an answer to that, because I also need to ask a very difficult question, because I've been told he's very ill, and certainly he only appeared here for, I think, the first half day. You know, we need to know his status. Is he going to be well enough to come back to work, or not? And when was he taken on as a full-time chairperson, as opposed to a part-time chairperson? I did ask about the issue of risk management. We raised it a year ago. We raised it 2 years ago, and yet there's no risk management strategy. And I'd like to know. I know the one court case relates. To this business of increasing your tariffs by 75% for the standard business fees and 900% for each security officer hire. But what are the other three cases still outstanding for you? And why did you not take our advice when we gave it a year ago and prepare contingent liabilities? Because I would imagine that if you're referring to money being handed over, that money could actually be in a contingent liability fund to cover exactly this situation of the case. These cases have just tied your hands. They've handcuffed you. It's like you can do nothing until these are all settled. But I'd like to know what the other three are about, please.
Can I just give an indication before I take members' hands? Why is it that you're not answering all the questions that were asked? Are there still answers outstanding? Now, can we continue then with those, please?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. We were just going to make the comment that the other categories of thought would be responded to. We'd lump them together, but the questions are there. They're still unanswered questions. Let me just deal with the outstanding questions on the chair, and then we can proceed with the other sections that would be outstanding on finances, and then there's also legals and prosecution. Honourable Kalabanis, the issue with regards to the appointment and the conditions of service, as it were, and the term of office of the chair resorts with the minister. So we're not in a position to comment on it because it's not an appointment that's done by council. So therefore, in terms of which the same process, we cannot answer for how long the term would be and what the arrangements are under his current incapacitation. It is something that lies within the authority and competence of the minister. The appointment of the chair is... it's a full-time appointment, so it's still a full-time executive chair until if and when the minister either changes that or if and when the law changes that. So that's as far as we can report, Honourable Member.
Well, I think, members, I do not want us to speculate about the individual cells. I think that is... No. Please, I'm speaking. Can we leave the issue of the chairperson's health? It's not in any of our hands at one side, please. The Act determines that it's a full-time, the current Act determines that it's a full-time chairperson. The current Act determines that members who paid attention during the process of going through the legislation would have realized that we said that it must be changed to be a part-time chairperson. This committee made that suggestion. Ms. Kulabana, further clarity on that issue.
I just, before you moved on, I just wanted to know then who determines the salary that's so much higher than equivalent appointments elsewhere. Who determines the salary?
I'll respond to that. It's also the minister, and as I read, I don't know whether you were there already yesterday morning, I read the answer that was sent to Mr. Stuber where the minister said he's going to investigate, he's asked the accounting general to investigate the salary of the chairperson, the salary of the directors, a director and the deputy directors.
With all due respect, I understand that it's being investigated, but somebody here signed off on it.
I'm not on the chairperson's. It's the minister. That is what the minister is saying. He's investigating that.
Sorry, so the suggestion is that someone in the ministry has determined this person warrants that salary.
Not the suggestion. The fact is that these people do not sign. None of these people in front of you sign off on the chairperson's salary or his appointment. That's the point. Can we continue with the rest of the answers, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm continuing on the financial ones as well as governance. The Honourable Kalabanat asked why there is no strategy. Yes, we confirm that there is no strategy that was approved at year end. The draft risk management strategy was submitted to Council at the end of at the fourth quarter of the 2011-12 financial year. However, we do conduct formal risk assessments. Those were done in February of 2011 for the 11-12 strategic plan. We also did one this year in May for the 12-18 strategic plan. The risk assessment reports are also available. We also do mitigation and tracking of risks on a continuous basis. The risk registers and progress thereof is submitted to Audit and Risk Committee on a quarterly basis.
Sorry, Chair, was that not an issue raised by the Auditor General?
And that was the issue raised by myself as well when I said you get yourself performance target achieved. Auditor General says there is nothing close. So you're not clarifying the issue. Quite frankly, the authority is busy wasting our time and I'm getting extremely agitated by this. We're going to break for tea, and I would ask the council members to take this authority to the corner and speak. And when we come back after tea, I'm expecting that you answer questions. We've really had enough now of not having figures available, of you continuing saying to us what you said to us yesterday, even though the Auditor General says something else. So we break now for tea. It's 5 to 11. 11:15, we're back.